edges of the clear plastic ties cutting off my blood supply at the wrist. I let them disconnect every single thought in my head. Who is this person? I thought, studying him closer now. He was wearing the hooded camo hunting jacket I had vaguely noticed before, a gray wool turtleneck, and a pair of faded jeans, battered by dust and long wear. Strapped to his hip was what looked like a small cell phone and a leather pouch. When we had traveled together before, he had kept all of his possessions in a battered leather briefcase he had found. That had suited him so much better than this weird imitation of what he thought a hunter should look like. It should have been reassuring to see him so prepared and well supplied, but somehow it only frightened me more. Chubbs's hand was steady as he took my chin in his hand, turning it to and fro, inspecting the cuts and bruises from the night before with a disapproving look. The others watched from behind the closed window, Jude's face so close it was almost pressed up against the glass.
"It might be better if you pretend to pass out," he said.
The suggestion came just in time. As I hit the ground, I saw the flash of black as the PSFs rounded the corner. 4. Vida had been right. The brown-haired woman was the tallest of the group, standing several inches above the men. One was an older guy, his hair puffing out in an ashy blonde ring around his head. The other two were younger and looked enough alike to be brothers, all armed with standard-issue rifles, handcuffs, the works.
"Can I help you?"
Chubbs's face was set in stone. The soldiers didn't know what to make of us, but they also didn't lower their weapons. I was starting to put it together, though, long before Chubbs began to speak again.
"What? So you're here to swipe my score out from under my nose? Trying to weasel out of having to pay me?"
The older soldier cocked a beetled brow.
"You're a skip tracer."
"My thoughts exactly." If that was the ruse we were running with, we were in more trouble than I thought. On a good day, Chubbs was about as threatening as a potted cactus.
"Here!"
He reached into the leather pouch on his belt and thrust something at the PSF. It looked like a small booklet, about the size of a passport. The old man stepped forward, but turned to look back at the woman.
"Take a walk around the perimeter. Make sure she was traveling alone."
Chubbs waved the booklet again as the three others took their walk. The old man sighed, glancing back and forth between Chubbs's face and whatever was written there.
"All right, Mr. Lister," he said, passing it back to him. "Have you run this one through the database?"
"She's not in it," Chubbs said. "She's probably been coasting for quite some time. There aren't any records of her."
"Did you test her?"
he asked.
"If she's blue or yellow, you'll need..."
"She's a green,"
Chubbs interrupted.
"Why? Want a demonstration?"
"We can take her," the man offered. "Save you the trouble of transporting."
"I told you, she's not in the system,"
Chubbs said, the nasty edge to his voice more pronounced.
"I know how this works. You can't line up my payment if she isn't registered. I have to go into the nearest station and do the paperwork if I want the bounty."
The man snorted, but didn't try to deny it.
"Was that car on the road yours?"
"No," Chubbs said, rolling his eyes. "I flew in on a cloud and came blitzing down from the heavens like a bolt of lightning on this kid."
"Hey, now," came the PSF's gruff reply. "I can take her and there's not a damn thing you'd be able to do about it. So watch your attitude, boy."
That attitude was what was throwing me off, too. Chubbs wasn't brave by nature. Courage tended to rear up when he felt that his friends were threatened, true, but this wasn't so much bravery as it was recklessness. And that was the last, the very last thing I associated with him. I don't know how much time passed between then and the moment the PSF's radio buzzed. A minute, 10 years, forever.
"This is Jacobson, do you read?"
The man unclipped his black walkie-talkie from his belt.
"I read. Did you find anything?" "No, nothing out of the ordinary. It's hard to tell much with the rain coming down. Any footprints would be washed out. Over."
"She's alone. I'm sure of it," Chubbs was saying. "I followed her."
"All right,"
the man said.
I saw his boots sink that much deeper into the dead, muddy grass as he took two steps toward me. My eyes squeezed shut again, and it was near impossible to force my body to go limp with him so close. I didn't want him touching me. Panic flared up bright as morning light as his boot nudged my ribs. The cold, wet leather of his glove closed around my upper arm, and he yanked me off the ground. My arm twisted, sending sharp, shooting pains into my shoulder.
"Don't!" Chubb snarled. "Don't touch!"
The PSF's grip didn't ease up.
"I mean..."
Chubbs began again, this time his voice neutral.
"They take out the cost of medical care from the reward money if the kids are injured. I can handle it from here."
"Sir."
"That's better," the man said, dropping me face down into the dirt. "Get her and clear the hell out of here. You're trespassing, and if I find you back here, I'll arrest you myself."
The rainwater was collecting in my ear, running free down the curve of my cheek and soaking Liam's old jacket. I waited for it to carry my fear away, too, down into the earth where it couldn't touch me again. I took in one deep, wet gulp of air and held it. A car engine started in the distance. I opened my eyes again, watching Chubbs come toward me. He knelt, one hand smoothing the tangled cloud of hair off my face. We listened to the wheels churn up the loose gravel of the driveway, both of us still and silent.
"I'm sorry," Chubbs said finally. "Are you okay? Did he dislocate your shoulder? Because if he did..."
"I'm all right," I said. But could you please cut the zip ties off now?" I was horrified by the way my voice shook. But in addition to the discomfort, my brain was starting to spark up old memories that were better left buried deep. The bus ride into Thurmond. The sorting. Sam. The minute I heard the plastic snap under his knife, I was pushing myself up onto my knees, ignoring the ache in my right shoulder. Chubbs began to reach over to check on it, but I leaned back, just out of his reach. We sat there, staring at each other, letting the space between us fill with rain and silence. Finally, I held out my hand, and without a word, he pressed the black booklet into it. The cover was a tough faux leather, and I hadn't necessarily been wrong in thinking that it was a passport. At first glance, it looked exactly the same, from the faint blue paper and the iridescent United States of America seal overlaying it. Fugitive Psi Recovery Agent. God, there was an official title for it. "Joseph Lister," I read. "Age 24, 6 feet, 170 pounds from Penn Hills, Pennsylvania." I glanced over at him. He was wearing an identical scowl to the one in his official photograph. "You know, it's funny. The least believable thing about all that is your weight."
"Oh, hilarious,"
he groused, snatching it back from me before I could skim through the other pages. It was so Chubbs, so the Chubbs I knew, that I smiled. He struggled to keep his lips pressed in a stern line, but I saw the beginnings of a curve. "I really thought you were dead," I said quietly. "I shouldn't have let them take you." He brought a hand up to his shoulder, pressing it there, as if his mind was cycling back to that moment, too.
"You pushed the panic button, right?"
I nodded.
"I would have done the same thing," he said. "The exact same thing. Well..."
He stopped, actually considering this.
"I probably would have been a little steadier in applying pressure to the wound. But other than that, yes."
"Well, you'll want to stop now," I told him dryly, "before you ruin our touching moment." The window above us suddenly opened, and Jude's curling mass of hair appeared there.
"Rue, are you okay? Oh my God, Vida wouldn't let me watch, but I tried to go around front, but the doors are all boarded up and there's nothing in here, so I just..."
Chubbs helped me up, giving me a look that clearly asked, "What fresh hell is this?" "I'll tell you everything later, and you're going to do the exact same, but for now, we have to see if we can find some kind of clue about what direction Lee might have headed." Chubbs's brow drew together as he lowered his voice.
"Didn't Lee tell you the procedure he and Harry set up to make contact?"
"I knew he had one, just not what it was," I said. "But he told you?" He nodded, shifting so his back was facing the window, and, I realized, the people inside.
We need to go. Now.
Wait, I began, but he already had his arm looped through mine.
They're watching the house. We have to go, he said. And I'm sorry, I'd much rather not have the League riding with us.
I detangled my arm from his, taking a step back. I can't leave them.
You are not League, he insisted. You are not one of them. You're one of us.
Don't think about it as us and them, I pleaded. We can all work together on this for now. You don't have to come back with us to California after we find Liam. You just have to stay with us now. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught Vida's electric blue hair through the window screen. Back then, you didn't want me to stay either, remember?
Yeah.
But that was different, he said, his voice low,
and you know it.
But at the time, you didn't know that. I had read him right. I saw it in his face, in the rigid lines of his tight shoulders. You asked me if I trusted you, I whispered. Do you trust me? He blew out a long breath, his hands resting on his hips.
God help me, he said finally. I do, but I trust you, not them. I don't even know who they are.
I only held out my hand and waited for him to take it. I needed his long fingers to close around mine, wanted that final proof that his better sense and reasoning had given way to the belief he used to have in me. I waited for him to come with me, to accept that we were now in this together again, that time and distance and uncertainty hadn't been enough to shake us. And he did. 10. The tan SUV reeked of fake evergreens. The smell of the air freshener was so overpowering I had to roll down my windows to get fresh air circulating.
You wouldn't be complaining if you were there to smell the guy I bought it off of, Chubb said, handing me a pair of sunglasses to wear. Now, put your seatbelt on, please.
Vida and Jude were already buckled into the back seat, though they hadn't gone quietly. My favorite team member got one look at the metal grating that separated the front seats from the back and just about ripped my hair out at the roots trying to yank me out of the front seat.
Are we driving this slowly because you have no idea where we're going? Vida asked, or because you're hoping we jump out of the car and put ourselves out of our misery.
Jude sat straight up, alarmed. We both recognized that tone. Vida picked fights when she was bored, and battles when she was stressed. If it were the latter, only one of them was going to make it out of this car ride alive. We'd be washing the blood off the windows for weeks.
That'd be doing the psychos holding your leashes a favor.
For the first time, I was grateful for the metal grating between us.
They're not psychos, you condescending dick, she snarled.
I'm condescending? Chubbs asked. Do you even know what that word means?
You piece of flaming so, Jude said, his voice high. Rue, how do you and Chubbs know each other?
Charles, he gritted out. My name is Charles.
That's supposed to be better?
Vida scoffed. Chubbs let the car roll to a stop at a red light and turned to look at me, fire burning behind the lenses of his glasses.
Yep, I said. She's always like this.
The tension that welled up in the car hovered among us, strung tight. One word or wrong move would snap it. Jude drummed his fingers against the armrest.
Cut that shit out, Nimrod, before I cut them off, Vida said. Nimrod, he shot back, his voice jumping an octave with outrage. You don't have to be so mean, you know?
I pressed a hand to my forehead. That gets you upset? That dumb name? She's been calling you Judith for months. Chubbs laughed, but turned it into a cough when he saw my look.
Yeah, well,
Jude huffed, drawing his bony knees up to his chest.
I guess I just don't see what's so insulting about being called a girl. The two of you seem to do okay when you're not biting my head off or acting like I'm 5 years old.
As opposed to what?
Chubbs said, flicking on the turn signal to merge onto a highway.
The 10-year-old you actually are?
Hey, I warned. None of that. He's almost 15.
Rue?
Jude began, his eyes shining.
Thank you.
You were that gawky when I first met you, I continued, poking Chubbs in the shoulder, and you were 18.
Never mind, Jude grumbled.
You were the gawky one, he corrected. Lee was the reckless one, Zoo was the cute one, and I was the wise one.
There was a knock on the grate behind us. Jude's face was floating there, his dark brown eyes peering between the two of us from behind the metal screen.
It would be nice, he said, if we had any idea what you guys are talking about. Like, who this Zoo person is?
Chubbs' eyes slid over to mine. Exactly how much did you tell them?
Exactly nothing, Vida said. And if it stays that way, I will make you regret it.
This time I rolled my eyes. Sure, whatever you say.
I felt the familiar warm tingling at the center of my chest and had just enough time to gasp as some invisible hand yanked me forward, smacking my forehead against the dashboard with enough force to stun me dumb.
Chubbs slammed on the brakes, forcing my seatbelt to do its job and lock against my chest. I was thrown back into my seat, an explosion of colors bursting in my vision.
Oh, hell no!
Chubbs roared, slamming a hand against the steering wheel.
That's it! We do not use our abilities on one another, goddammit! Behave yourself!
Chill the fuck out, Granny, Vida said. You're going to give yourself a stroke.
You cannot give yourself...
Chubbs began in a growl, but caught himself. Jude let out a nervous laugh behind us, but I only pressed a hand to my stinging forehead. She had made her point.
Zoo was a friend of ours, I said. We traveled together for a while.
I thought Kate got you out, though, Jude said. Did you guys get separated or something? It seems like it would be dangerous just to be out wandering around.
It wasn't like that, Chubbs said. After the three of us broke out of the camp... He might as well have told the others that he was a wizard. Even Vida leaned forward, suddenly so much more interested.
You, she began. You broke out of a camp.
Liam planned it, Chubbs gritted out. But yes, I did.
Does that kid think he's some kind of expert in getaways?
Vida muttered.
God damn.
Jude's eyes were bright with interest.
What was that like? Did you have your own room? Like a little prison cell? Did they make you do hard labor?
I heard that...
The kids in the league knew about the camps, vaguely. There were only a few of us who had actually lived in one and experienced the life firsthand. But there was an unspoken rule we didn't talk about it. Everyone knew the truth. But the truth didn't live inside them the way it did for us. They'd heard about the sorting machines, the cabins, the testing, but most of their stories were gossip, completely wrong. These kids had never stood for hours on end in an assembly line. They didn't know fear came in the shape of a small black camera lens, an eye that followed you everywhere, at all times. My chest tightened with the effort of keeping silent. One by one, my fingers closed around the seatbelt's silver fabric until I was all but choking it.
"Do you not remember it or something?" Jude asked. "Were you only there for a little while? Is that why you can't talk about it, because there's nothing to say?"
"I would shut your mouth," Chubbs advised.
"Come on," Jude whined. "If she'd just talked to us."
"What?"
The word exploded out of me.
"What do you want me to tell you? You want to hear about how they tied us up like animals to bring us into the camp? Or, hey, how about that time a PSF once beat a girl's skull so badly, she actually lost an eye? You want to know what it was like to drink rotten water for an entire summer until new pipes finally came? How I woke up afraid and went to bed in terror every single day for 6 years? For God's sake, leave me alone! Why do you always have to dig and dig when you know I don't want to talk about it?"
I regretted the outburst halfway through, but the speech tumbled out, one vile, traitorous word after another. Chubbs only glanced at the glowing blue clock, then back up at the soggy road. In the back seat, Jude was as silent as snow falling on asphalt, his mouth opening and closing like he was trying to taste the burn of his words after they left his lips.
"I don't know about the rest of you, but I'd be up for hearing about the one-eyed chick," Vida said with a shrug.
"You are actually the worst person I have ever met," Chubb said.
"And people like you are the reason we have middle fingers."
"Guys," I started. Kate had told me once, a long time ago, that the only way to survive your past was to find a way to close it off behind you, to shut one door before passing into another, brighter room. I was afraid. That was the truth. I was terrified of the guilt and shame that would come flooding in when I retraced my steps, turned the lock, and found the girl I had abandoned. I didn't want to know what the darkness there had done to her, if she would even recognize herself in my face. I didn't want to know what Chubbs would think of me after he found out what I'd done for the League. I didn't want to know what Liam would think of me, or of the smell of smoke in my hair that never went away, no matter how many times I washed it.
"At least tell us about how you ended up splitting with Liam," Jude said. "If you guys were traveling together, why did you, stop? Kate came to get you when you pushed the panic button, I know, but was Liam gone by then? What about him?" He pointed at Chubbs.
Those memories weren't any less painful, but they were important.
"All right," I said. "You know that we traveled together, Liam, Chubbs, Zoo, and me. But what you don't know is that we were looking for a place, a safe haven called East River. To understand why I did it and how he ended up on his own, I have to start there."
"Fine,"
Vida answered, leaning back away from the grating, her eyes drifting over to the window at her right. The first traces of snow drifted into our roaring path. I told them about East River, how it had felt like a dream until we woke up and realized we were trapped in a nightmare, about Clancy, which was so much harder than even I expected, how we escaped, how Chubbs was shot, and how it was just the two of us in the safe house. Jude started to interrupt, his eyes wide with either anxiety or confusion I couldn't tell. I felt my own heart drift up and up and up until I had to swallow it down to get through what came next. My decision and Kate's deal. What I had seen in Cole's memory and his own explanation of it. In the strangest way, it made me feel closer to Liam. He was alive and vivid in my thoughts. Solid, warm Liam, with his sunglasses on, the sunlight in his hair, and the words of a favorite song on his lips. I half expected to look up and see him in the driver's seat. No one spoke. I couldn't bring myself to look behind me. I felt both Jude's and Vida's conflicted feelings cling to my skin, the way condensation was gathering on the windows. I felt a light touch on my shoulder. I turned slowly to see Jude retract his finger back through the metal grate. His bottom lip was white where it was caught between his teeth. But he was looking at me, not with fear or any of its ugly cousins, just a deep, sincere sadness. He could still stand to look at me.
"Rue," Jude whispered, "I'm so sorry."
"Can I just ask one thing?"
Chubb said, his voice sounding tight in his throat after I finished.
"What are you doing with the flash drive?"
"I was going to bring it back to Cole," I said. "He and I have a deal. If I get the intel back to him, it'll be enough to shift the priorities of the League back to freeing kids from camps and exposing the government's lies." Chubbs rubbed his forehead.
"And you believe him?" "The only thing Liam ever said about him was that he used to set his toys on fire when he didn't get his way."
"I believe him," I said. "He won't hurt us. He's one of the few who doesn't want us gone, apparently."
"Gone?" Chubbs asked, alarmed.
I let Jude explain. His stumbling, rambling explanation was coated by rough grief, and it made the story that much more horrible to hear.
No, 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 Chubbs said, You're just going back, hoping they manage to pick out all of the bad seeds?
Don't say it like that,
Jude cried.
It'll get better. Rob's gone, right? Kate will let us know when we can come back.
You and Liam will be safe, at least from the League, I told Chubbs. They won't come after you. You get it, right? You understand why I told Cole I'd do this.
Sure. I get it,
he said, his voice cold enough to drive a chill through even my veins. And again, I read the question he was really asking in the silence he left to fill the space between us. I knew what he wanted to ask, because it was the same thought that had been circling in on me for days. If the intel is that important, why would you ever give it to the League? Of all the training and ops and the League-sponsored explosions I'd been unfortunate enough to witness, none seemed half as dramatic as Chubbs's thrilling tale of escape. We pulled into an old camping ground for the night, just outside of a city called Asheville in western North Carolina. I'd managed to fill most of the 5-hour drive with explanations, and the whole thing had left me drained. I didn't put up any kind of struggle when Chubbs and Jude argued for stopping. We did a quick walkthrough of the area to make sure it was clear of other visitors before returning to pull supplies from the SUV. I popped the latch, stepping back from the door as it opened.
Oh my God, I managed. The whole thing was just so impressive.
A wall of small stacked plastic tubs and drawers, all labeled with handy reminders like first aid and rope and vitamins and fishing hooks. The care and forethought it had taken to put this all together was impressive, if not completely terrifying in how ruthlessly thorough it was. Jude gave Chubbs a long look of appraisal.
You had day-of-the-week underwear growing up, didn't you?
Chubbs merely pushed the glasses up the bridge of his nose.
I don't see how that's any of your business.
He laid out the entire story for me as we set up the tent that had been folded neatly under the back seat. Vida, at least, was able to get a small fire going with a lighter.
I don't actually remember most of this stuff happening, Chubbs said, struggling with the tent's frame. The League brought me to the nearest hospital, which happened to be the one in Alexandria.
Not Fairfax? I asked, smoothing the damp hair away from my face. Jude and Vida were doing their best to listen to all of this while pretending they weren't. Chubbs shrugged.
I have a vague memory of seeing some faces, but... I told you that I look like my dad, right?
I nodded.
Well, one of the doctors recognized me. She used to work with Dad, but transferred. Anyway, it's not important. They managed to stabilize me, but this doctor and her staff knew I needed to be in a better-equipped hospital. So she got on the phone and tracked Dad down. He was going to meet us at my aunt's restaurant, remember?
I remember.
He was able to meet the ambulance when it arrived at Fairfax Hospital. They already had a fake ID prepared for me, so that's what they registered me under. They kept an oxygen mask on my face the entire time. I got walked through 2 sets of security guards, and no one looked twice.
And they didn't tell the agents who brought you in? I finished. The League has no idea what happened to you. You're still listed as MIA in all of the related op files.
Chubbs snorted. They tried telling the agents I coded out and died, but they didn't bite. One day, my dad had 6 different people come to him fishing for information, but they didn't get a word out of him.
The real trick hadn't been admitting him at the new hospital under a false name. The hospital had become well-versed in a don't-ask-we-won't-tell policy when it came to dealing with the government and their requests for information, so much so that they were nearly shut down a good 6 times. Dr. Merriweather's stroke of genius was to hide his son, Marcus Bell, in an isolated room in the maternity ward for treatment. When he was strong enough, he was zipped up in a body bag and taken out of the hospital in a rented hearse. The League agents found the transfer paperwork and tried to connect the dots, but Chubbs became a ghost the moment he had been wheeled into Fairfax Hospital. From there, it had been a matter of finding a place for Chubbs to recuperate and build his strength back up again.
I will leave it to you to imagine what it was like to live in a ramshackle barn in upstate New York for 4 months. he said, grimacing as he rolled his shoulder back. I will go to my grave, smelling hay and manure every time I close my eyes.
The old barn belonged to a close family friend in the Adirondacks, and it had been isolated, cold, and lonely by the sound of it. His parents could only come up twice to see him without sparking suspicion, but the elderly woman who owned the farm was there twice a day to help with his physical therapy and provide food. Mostly, though, he was bored to tears.
I like to think I get along pretty well with the elderly, but this woman looked like she dragged herself up from the crypt every morning.
Yeah, to feed and nurse you, I reminded him.
The only books she had were about a crime-solving spinster bothering people in her small village, he said. I'm allowed to be a little bitter about the experience.
No, I said. Actually, I'm pretty sure you're not.
How did you end up doing all of this, though? Jude asked.
Chubb sighed.
I actually have to give Mrs. Berkshire credit. It was something she said after I told her about how I got out of Virginia, that the last place people tend to look for the hunted is among the hunters. She fell asleep mid-sentence, of course. I had to wait 4 hours to be blessed with the second half of her old lady mysticism.
I pressed a hand over my eyes.
I'll have you know, I haven't been suspected once, he said, a bit too pleased with himself. My parents got the doctored birth papers, which was the hardest part. It's actually not that difficult to be registered as an official skip tracer. You just have to provide the right paperwork and establish yourself.
The fire popped loudly, collapsing the small pile of wood we'd gathered. It seemed to be the right place to take a break in the story. I stood and pulled Chubbs up off the ground to come with me. Jude started to rise, but I waved him back.
We're just going to get some food, I said. We'll be right back.
Don't worry, Vida said in her sugary, sweet voice. She wrapped an arm around Jude's shoulders.
We have been known to survive 2 whole minutes without you.
I tried very hard not to stomp over to the car.
I really do not trust that girl, Chubb said, glancing back over his shoulder where Vida was still sitting, her legs stretched out in front of her. Youths who dye their hair are always battling inferiority complexes or hiding secrets.
I raised an eyebrow. Youths? He was so focused on her that he almost whacked himself in the face with the rear door of the SUV. Chubb's hand flew to his left shoulder, as if to protect it.
Let me see it,
I said, stopping him before he could reach for the tub labeled protein bars. He sighed and slipped that arm from its jacket sleeve. There was enough stretch in his shirt's fabric for him to pull the collar down across his left shoulder, where a quarter-sized patch of pink, puckered skin stood out stark against his otherwise dark skin.
Did they...
My throat suddenly felt dry.
Did they get it out? The bullet?
He adjusted his shirt, smoothing it back down again.
It was a clean shot. It went straight through. As far as bullet wounds go, it wasn't anything awful.
It wasn't anything awful. I swallowed, a weak attempt to keep from crying.
Oh, geez, not again, he said. I'm fine. I'm alive, right?
Why did you come back? I whispered, hearing my own voice break. Why didn't you stay up there, where it was safe? Chubbs, food cradled against his chest, reached one long arm up to close the door.
And leave you two idiots out on the run?
I watched him heave in 2 deep breaths, then send them sailing out in a long white cloud.
I'm so angry with you,
he said finally, his voice low.
I'm furious. I know why you erased yourself, I understand. But all I want to do is shake some sense back into you.
I know, I said. I know, okay?
Do you, though? He asked. You won't leave these two, even though they could report me and Lee back to the League. You put yourself in the line of fire with the worst people, and you did it without someone there to watch your back. How do you think Lee's going to react when he finds out what you did?
The knot in my stomach tightened to the point of pain. He was furious. The strength of the anger powering him was like a beacon to my mind. It made him vulnerable, exposed.
"He won't find out," I said. "I told you all I was going to do was get the flash drive and make sure he was all right. I wasn't going to. I'm not going to interfere."
"That is the most bullshit, cowardly thing I have ever heard come out of your mouth," he shot back. "You lied to us before about what you are, and I got it. I understand why you did it. But now, you're out, and we can all be together again. And you're choosing the only option that ends with us apart? Maybe Liam could forgive you for what you did. But if you go back to them, to California, I will never forgive you."
He started to turn back to the fire and dark green tent, only to pivot back to me.
"Do you remember what it felt like when East River was attacked and we hid in that lake? All that night, I kept thinking, well, this is the worst thing that will ever happen to me. I thought the same thing when we escaped Caledonia, and we had to leave the other guys in our cabin behind, bleeding to death in the snow. And again, when I was shot. But the thing is, I was wrong. Ruby, the worst thing, was being safe up in that barn and not knowing for 6 months what happened to you and Liam and Suzume. It was seeing your names pop up on the skip tracer networks with upped rewards and potential sightings and not being able to find any of you for months.
Sometimes, most of the time with Chubbs, really, it was impossible to tell his anger from his fear. They fed into each other.
Then, all of a sudden, you were showing up everywhere. In Boston, in a train station in Rhode Island. You were being really careless there, you know?
He shot me a disapproving look.
Liam's even worse. For months, nothing. Then a tip about him being sighted in Philadelphia. I had to doctor evidence that the tip was bad to get it deleted off the network.
The League had backdoor access to both the PSF and Skip Tracer databases of kids, but neither of Liam's profiles looked like they had been updated in ages. I knew. I checked twice a week. No wonder it looked like it hadn't been updated the last time I looked. "How did you know to go to his house?" I asked. The timing couldn't have been a coincidence.
"I figured it had to be something to do with the protocol Harry set up to help them find each other. Based on the sightings, I thought maybe the two of you were coming down to his old house to check to see if his stepdad set up the procedure."
"Which was what?"
"When Cole and Liam left to join the League, Harry told them that if he and their mom felt like they needed to get out, he'd leave coordinates under the windowsill of Liam's old bedroom."
"And you have the coordinates?" I asked.
"No," he said. "There was nothing there."
"That must be why he went to find Cole in Philadelphia, to see if he knew anything." Chubbs rubbed a knuckle over his lips, nodding.
"That's what I'm thinking, too. It doesn't help us, though, if Cole had no idea either."
"I know," I said. "Running blind, just like old times." Chubbs sighed, and I swayed toward him, resting my forehead against his upper arm.
"We'll watch the Skip Tracer network. See if there are any other sightings."
Chubbs shifted, hiking the cans up against his chest.
"He's screwed up a few times in the past. Chances are he'll do it again."
It was a terrifying thought. We might pick up hints of him here and there, but chances were we'd be too far away to swoop in and help if he were captured. He had a big enough head start on us that he could put some real distance behind him, and it was overwhelming to know that. Suddenly, everything seemed so much harder and more impossible than only a few minutes before. It all felt so pointless. "I'm so tired of this," I told him. "I know I don't have any right to be. I know I did this to us, to myself. But I don't want to fight anymore. I'm so tired of everything, of all of this, and knowing it's never going to get any better, that nothing I do will ever make anything better. I'm so sick of it all." Chubbs shifted the cans in his arms, ducking down to get a closer look at my face. I wasn't crying, but my throat ached and my head was pounding.
"No, what you are is exhausted," he said.
Depression, anxiety, difficulty focusing. You're a classic case. Come on, you'll feel better after you get food and some sleep.
That won't solve anything either.
I know, he said, but it's a start.
I learned a long time ago that it was possible to be so far past the point of exhaustion that sleep no longer felt like an option. My stomach ached with the need for it, and my head felt heavy, but I could feel myself waiting for something, muscles tense and brain unable to settle. It was like no matter how hard I fought to focus on the point of the tent's roof, to count off sheep, my mind kept drifting back to the night we had spent in the abandoned Walmart, to the kids we had been so convinced were going to screw us over in the worst way. I must have nodded off at some point, because the next thing I knew, I was startled awake by a cold blast of air. Vida was at the opening of the tent, unzipping it slowly and as quietly as she could and stepping through. My head was slow to come up out of the fog of sleep, but I was alert enough to be suspicious, no matter how much I wanted to drift back into dreamland. I counted to 30, to 60. I listened as her footsteps grew softer, watched, waiting for her to come back. She didn't. What are you up to? I thought, crawling over Chubb's long legs to the tent's opening. If she had needed to get a breath of fresh air or relieve herself, she would have been back by now. Despite the crippling dark, I spotted her right away. She was shivering, rubbing her arms to try to shake off the night's icy grip. I saw her glance back toward the tent once and pulled back, hoping the moon wasn't bright enough for her to make out my shape behind the tent's thin waterproof covering. Vida slinked her way around Chubbs's tan Ford Explorer, circling it twice before coming to stop by the driver's side. Sucks to be you, I thought, feeling a little smugger than was probably necessary. I had reminded Chubbs to lock it, and with the gun inside the glove box, she'd have to find a rock or something heavy enough to break the glass if she wanted in, something that would be difficult to manage quietly. If it hadn't been for her bright hair, I would have lost her in the darkness as she headed off the trail into the forest. I stood and slipped out, tracing her steps around the car, trying to see how far she'd go. My toes were frozen stiff, sticking to the frost of the clumps of wild grass and mud. Vida kept walking, and I kept inching forward, more and more, until she was far enough for her hair to disappear into the night-cloaked trees completely, but not far enough to hide the blue-white glow of the device in her hand that cut through the darkness. 11. Wait for her to come back, my mind reasoned. Surprise her here. But I was running, even before the thought had fully formed in my mind. All of the training the League had tried to drill into me, all of my better judgment, all logic, was ripped away with the first flash of that strange light. If she were contacting Cole, why would she have to hide it from us? Why would she need to send a message to him in private? Because she's not contacting Cole. I slid around the car. The coming winter had stripped the nearby trees bare. The naked branches snapped against my face and arms. The fine patches of ice and frost coating the clumps of grass stung my feet like hell, but it was nothing compared to fighting my way through the thickets of dead brush. It didn't matter how much noise I was making. I wasn't aiming for surprise. It was impossible to get the jump on Vida. I just wanted as much momentum as humanly possible when I tackled her to the ground. She was still clutching the device when I lowered my head and rammed my shoulder into her. Vida had enough time to try to swing a knee up, square into my chest. With my full weight on her, and only one foot planted on the uneven hill, we slammed into the ground. I hooked my leg around hers, and she reached up to get a good grip on my neck, and neither of us was willing to let go. Even as we rolled down the slope, smashing through underbrush and nailing what was very likely every single rock on the damn mountain. We didn't stop. We couldn't. Not until we crashed into a tree and sent a shower of dead brown leaves down over us. My vision swam, both from the spinning and the blows, but I was on top. I had the advantage, and I took it. A warm burst of Vida's breath clouded the air. I had my legs locked around her center, trying to keep her in place as I started to reach for the black device lying beside her neck.
Never in my life had I seen terror like that in Vida's eyes. She reared up under me, freeing her arm from where it was pinned beneath her, and slapped me hard enough that, for a second, my vision blanked white. With a grunt, she swung her open palm again, clubbing me in the ear and effectively knocking me off her. Vida had jumped to her feet, and I staggered up after her. My sight split in two, and I wasn't sure which one of her feet was actually flying toward my stomach until it made contact. I threw my arms up in front of my face to block the next one.
"How could you?"
I gasped out. My fingers caught her wrist, but she ripped it free. I swung my fist toward her again and watched, stunned, as she went flying back through the air a good 24 feet before I could even touch her.
Stop!
I panted hard and was only able to keep on my feet for one more second. I sagged sideways into the rough embrace of a tree and slid all the way down onto my knees. The words were faint under the roar of blood pulsing in my ears. I turned, watching as Jude stumbled down the slope, tripping through the dense cluster of branches and soggy leaves, until he dropped to his knees at Vida's side. Chubb stood a short distance away, his arms still outstretched in the direction he had thrown her.
"What?" he called. "The hell is going on?"
She...
I sputtered, bringing a shaking hand to swipe at my mouth. He marched toward me, flicking his flashlight in my direction.
"She had... device... calling DC?"
When he finally reached me, he grabbed my arm. I squirmed away from the intense light he was trying to shine directly into my face. I lurched away from him, the ground rising up to meet me.
"Do you see it?"
I heard myself asking.
"Do you see it? Give me the light!"
"Ask her!" Vida was shouting. "She attacked me!"
Chubbs dutifully aimed the flashlight where I pointed.
"You need to sit down. Hey, are you even listening to me?"
I padded around the dirt, fingers groping through the mulch, rocks, and roots. I knew the moment I had found it. The black shell was unnaturally smooth and still warm to the touch. During the fight, the screen had flipped down to the ground, stifling the glow.
"What is that?"
Chubbs crouched down next to me.
"A phone?"
"Close, but not quite."
"A chatter?" came Jude's startled voice. "Where did you get that?"
He was standing behind us, supporting a swaying Vida. No, he wasn't supporting her. He had one arm across her chest to keep her from going at my throat. "Dumb, brave kid," I thought for the 1,000th time. I turned my eyes back down on the screen and flicked it on. I had interrupted her in the middle of typing a message. Good. I brought the screen up close to my eyes, squinting at the series of nonsense numbers and letters. The little black line was still blinking, waiting for her to finish up. "I have them. Phase 2, INSTRLWJERL:KSSLKJDFJ.
"You bitch,"
I said, looking up.
"You really thought you could play us? Turn us back over to the League? What did Alvin promise you? That you could take over as team leader?"
I was half blind with rage, too angry to let her answer. I stood, throwing the device on the ground. Vida and Jude both took generous steps back. My brain was humming with need, with nothing more than the desire to pry into hers and leave it mangled and ruined. My anger added a boost to their strength, and I thought, I really did. If I let them loose, the invisible hands would take her this time, without me needing to grab her. I turned, ready to let them fly. Instead, I felt a hand close over my wrist and pull me back. Chubbs was on his feet now, too, his eyes fixed on the screen. I heard him click a button, and then the chatter was hovering in front of my face, and I was reading an old, received message. "Head south on 40. Address as discussed. Explain updated op immediately upon contact. Tell her I am sorry."
"Tell her I'm sorry?"
I turned back toward Vida, who had turned away, her face a stone mask.
"Who is this, Cole?"
Vida's swollen lips slurred her speech, and when she spoke, it was so quiet I had to strain to hear her. Her reluctance proved the blossoming theory in my mind. After all, there was only one person she protected like this.
"No," she said. "It's Kate."
I was ready to have it all out there, but Chubbs insisted that we return to the camp and rebuild the fire with a sharp, "I prefer not to take my bad news in the freezing dead of night, thank you very much." He steered me toward one end of the smothered fire and headed for his car. I was distantly aware of the beep of the car unlocking and the door slamming shut. When he sat back down next to me, Chubbs started in on cleaning the cuts on my face and arms with a total lack of sympathy.
"Someone better start talking now," he said, "because, trust me, you don't want to hear what I have to say about all this, especially at 1 o'clock in the morning."
Vida sniffed, drawing her knees up to her chest. The right half of her face was cast entirely in darkness, or covered in an enormous bruise. I held up the chatter to the dim firelight, turning it back and forth. "Who gave you this? Nico?" She waited so long to answer, I thought for sure she wouldn't. All I got was a shrug. Her nails were clawing into the dirt, dragging clumps of it up into her clenched fists. "So he and Kate are in on this too?" I demanded. "Who else?" Vida crossed her arms over her chest and stared out into the dark distance.
"Why keep this from us?" Jude asked. "Did she ask you to? It doesn't make any sense, and it really doesn't make sense that you still won't talk about it. You got caught, and now the op has been compromised. And what are you supposed to do when that happens?"
"Accept, adapt, and act. Quickly." The words had been scrawled onto one of the walls in the training room. They might as well have been tattooed directly onto our brains.
"Fine,"
she said, circling her shoulders back as if to ease the tension there. She's angry, I realized. Vida was furious with herself. The perfect little soldier had blown her own op, the special one Kate had entrusted her with. She was breathing hard, sucking air up between her clenched teeth. Kate was the single most important person in her life, maybe the only one who really mattered to her. I had an idea of why she had withheld that information, but I wanted to hear her admit it.
"Kate and Cole planned this whole thing, pretty much from the second we brought his ass back to HQ. Vida said. "They go back. She took him under her wing when he first joined, helped train him. He told her the truth about your dumbass Prince Charming and the flash drive, and you were the solution they came up with. For whatever reason, Kate stupidly trusts you to handle shit."
"Why have Cole give me the story, then?"
"They're watching her, Rob and the others. She knew what he was like, or at least figured it out a few months ago. But she was trying to stay close to his creepy ass to make sure he didn't come after us. She couldn't go to Albin or any of the advisors because she was afraid she'd be reassigned from us if they saw her as being difficult. Nico showed Cole, Kate, and me the video of Blake being offed, and she just about went ballistic."
"When was this?"
"Just after you left HQ."
Vida tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, glancing over at me.
"Nico said you told him not to. But something you said to Cole made him push the issue. They're sitting on the video until we bring the intel back."
Of course, because keeping the Children's League together was the top priority here. Not protecting kids. Not cutting off the psychopaths.
"Let me see if I understand this," Chubbs began. "Kate was in on everything from the beginning, but she kept silent on it. Was that to act as some kind of failsafe?"
"Not bad, Granny," Vida said. "Cole said Kate's role had to stay a secret, even from you. If you dipshits got caught and were brought in for questioning, he didn't want you to be able to implicate her. If he took the fall, at least Kate would still be around to be on our side. She hated it, but I told her she had to agree, otherwise I wasn't going to help you. She didn't say yes until she realized there was no way to get Jude removed from the mission without it making people suspicious. Rob requested him personally."
Jude looked like he was a breath away from throwing up all over himself. The firelight drew out the flush of panic in his cheeks. Vida threw a truly pitying look his way.
"Kate said he ran after you called him out,
went totally off the fucking grid before Barton could bring him in for questioning.
So,
he won't be there when we get back, Jude said, sighing in relief.
No, but it meant that I had released a furious monster out into the world to rip it apart and remake it to his own liking.
That's everything I know, Vida said. The end. But I'm telling you now, if either of you breathe a word, one goddamn word, about Kate, I will come down on you so hard, they'll be naming hurricanes after me for a fucking century.
I opened my mouth to fire back at her, but thought better of it in the end. For as long as I'd known Vida, I'd felt a sharp sense of pity over her obvious worship of Kate. I thought I'd been given a glimpse of the real Kate that lived below the pristine exterior. But now it was becoming harder and harder to believe that either one of us was completely right about who she was. To me, her belief in the League had always seemed naive. I really thought she blinded herself to everything going on around her to stay in that happy world that existed only in her mind. Maybe Jude really was right, and the League of today didn't remotely resemble the one she had willingly joined years ago. Then why did she only give herself up to me in pieces? And why had it taken me so long to put them together into a somewhat complete picture?
You've been communicating directly with Kate, I suppose.
Chubbs took the chatter out of my limp hand and turned it over.
She's been guiding you along?
Yeah, Vida said. She sent me the routes to get down here. Too bad she couldn't just load his ass into Google Maps. Not even Nico has been able to track him.
The screen between Chubbs's fingers flashed to life and let out a low, vibrating growl. The light it emitted was bright enough that we could all watch as his eyebrows rose steadily up past his glasses frames to his hairline.
Well, maybe she can't send exact coordinates, he said, flipping it around. But she has an idea of where we could start.
12. Target sighted outside Nashville. Hostile blue tribe in nearby area. Approach with caution.
The sighting isn't listed in the Skip Tracer network, Chubb said.
His finger flicked against the screen of the small tablet I had fished out of the glove box for him, scrolling down.
That's not surprising, though. I haven't been able to pick up an internet signal in a few days to download an update.
What is that thing? I asked. At the top of the color screen was Liam's bruised, scowling face, the picture that had been taken, I guess, when he was brought into Caledonia. Next to the photo was a list of the same information I had been able to access in the PSF network, the only update being that his reward had gone up to $200,000, and his last reported sighting was outside of Richmond, Virginia.
It has direct access to the Skip Tracer network, Chubb said. You get one after you register and are approved by the government. The information on there is closely guarded. The PSFs don't have access to it, so they can't swoop in and steal a score.
It was a touchscreen, easy enough to flick through the various listings beneath it. A skip tracer named P. Everton had been the one to sight him in Richmond. He had posted the following on Liam's listing. Stewart driving red Chevy truck, stolen plates, target in jeans and black hooded sweatshirt. Lost sight of car during pursuit. Why would they be sharing information with one another like this? I asked, if only one of them gets the reward.
Because if a tip turns out to be good, you're upped in the standings. Each kid, especially the big bounties, are assigned points in addition to dollar amounts. But you can also earn points by adding tips or supporting the PSFs when they are trying to locate a kid.
Chubbs shrugged.
The top 20 or so skip tracers get more supplies from the government, not to mention better equipment, and easy access to the internet. That alone makes a huge difference. I can't even tell you how many stupid kids have been found because of the pictures and postings their families had online. I think that's probably how the PSFs found me the first time. Mom forgot she had an album of our cabin up on some website.
I nodded, continuing to scroll through the list. There were only about 1,000 or so active listings of kids, many of them without pictures. These, I assumed, were the lucky ones who had been added to the online IAAN registry by their unsuspecting parents for updates and instructions from the government, but who had avoided being collected and brought into a camp. They had either found a great place to hide, or had mastered the art of living off the grid. I kept scrolling. Dale, Andrea. Dale, George Ryan.